Hi there, I'm Darren Krause, editor of LiveWire Calgary. Thank you once again for joining me for LiveWired in Calgary, a spoken word partnership with CJSW 90.9 FM. You know, I love doing this show because it allows me to share stories of Calgarians on air or via podcast. It's reaching a different audience that might not always see the great work we're doing at LiveWireCalgary.com. We'd love to do more of it, and we can. With different perspectives telling the story, too. You can lend a hand by fostering the growth of consistent local journalism in Calgary by making your pledge at patreon.com/livewirecalgary. With your support, we can add more journalists to the mix. We've committed all of our Patreon funds to funding local writers, providing greater depth and breadth to your understanding of the city we live, work, and play in. Thanks for joining me this month. Enjoy the show. This is LiveWired in Calgary. Hello, Calgary. Welcome to the February 2019 edition of LiveWired in Calgary. I am your host, Darren Krause, editor of LiveWireCalgary.com. This show is done in partnership with the fine folks here at CJSW 90.9 FM and is recorded in studio at the University of Calgary on traditional Treaty 7 land. We have got a jam-packed show once again today. We're going to talk heritage homes. We're going to talk about the debate over safe consumption sites in Calgary. That one's an interesting one. We'll dive into some provincial politics and a little bit on the 1 meter space being proposed in the safe passing bylaw. We'll have all that. Plus, we'll get to On Your Radar this month. Stick around. Follow us on Twitter at LiveWire Calgary, on Instagram at LiveWire_Calgary, and like us on Facebook. All right, let's start this month's show off with a couple of quick topics. We're going to touch on Alberta politics and the 1 meter safe passing law. There's been some interesting social media chatter about having a none of the above option on the ballot in the upcoming spring election. You might be asking why. Well, let's start with the governing NDP. They are running around the province making announcements and re-announcements basically on the taxpayer's dime. Typically, there's a so-called blackout period prior to an expected election where you put a moratorium on such announcements and handing out cash to everyone. But most recently, you've got a Calgary Transit Green Line funding re-announcement, essentially. You've got an Edmonton school photo op to tout their education spending and the opening of new schools. You've got the recent $100 million announced for a historic solar power plan. You've got a $3.7 billion oil-by-rail deal. And most recently, $80 million in royalty credits for an already announced $2 billion methanol plant near Grand Prairie. I mean, I don't know about you, but if you want a campaign, then drop the writ already. Of course, there's also the Alberta Party and five of their candidates, including leader Stephen Mandel, that have been banned from running for not filing a financial disclosure as per Elections Alberta rules. Here's a pro tip. If you want to govern the province, if you've got your sights set on that, you better be able to file this paperwork. And of course, finally, information about an alleged vote fraud scheme is supposedly being investigated by the RCMP. This involving, of course, Jason Kenney and the United Conservative Party. And the case was brought forward by former UCP MLA, now independent, Prab Gill. I'm just going to let this all sink in for you and remind you that there's an election coming up, likely in a month. So we'll switch gears now. See what I did there? Switch gears to the proposed safe passing bylaw. It's coming later this month at the city's Transportation and Transit Committee as part of a package of new traffic rules. I don't know about you, but I'm baffled this isn't already in the rules. I don't want to hit a cyclist, and most people don't. I also give a lane's width when passing a vehicle on the highway when they have their four-way flashers on. But local cycling advocate Kevin Schlock said it's actually for those drivers who like to quote-unquote punish past people. You know, the ones who leave inches to spare, as if to tell cyclists to get off the road. You know, shaking their fists so you can see them, get off the road! You'll see it later this month, and I think it's only common sense that a law like this is entrenched in our bylaws for everyone's safety. This month, Heritage Properties came into focus with the Enoch Sales House burning to the ground in Victoria Park. Though protected, dithering on its use ultimately cost Calgary another of its heritage buildings. Post-fire, conversation on social media centered around what we can do to protect the heritage properties in Calgary. That actually led me to Lorna Cordero. She owns a home in Hillhurst, just a couple of blocks north of Kensington Road. She went through the relatively simple process to have her home designated as a municipal historic resource. We chatted last week in a nearby coffee shop, so don't be alarmed when someone calls out for the pickup of a decaf Americano. And we talked about Calgary's struggle with valuing these homes and their history. Lorna, tell me about your house, first of all.
Well, my house is a very ordinary house, to be honest, yes. So when it was designated, actually one of the counselors at the time, I think it was Chabot, said, why should we designate this home? It's a very ordinary house and doesn't really warrant designation. So it kind of sparked a bit of discussion. This is back in, I think, 2017. And there was an interview on CBC and there was some articles in the paper about this. So up until now, I think council has seen designation as being something very special. So in regards to a very unusual home, architecturally, or some famous person has lived there, but what council has failed to see is that ordinary homes are being demolished at a rapid rate. I think five alone have been demolished in the last couple of years on my street. That's not a big street. So while I say it's ordinary, to me it's extraordinary because there's a lot of love and care that has gone into the house over the last 110 years. It was built in 1911. The significant thing about my house is it's one of the dwindling housing stock of that type in Calgary. Calgary has less than 2% of its housing stock is heritage homes, so homes that are over 100 years, according to Stats Canada. So that's not a lot. And when I see the rate of demolition, I thought of my house as anything but ordinary. So I made the effort to have it designated and to kind of make set a precedent in my community because it's the only residential house that's designated in Hillhurst.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What, why do you think that is? I mean, obviously we've got a number of these homes, and I mean, clearly in these areas, especially the inner city, a lot of the homes are older. Why do you think people don't do
it? I think it would be a little slanted to say it's greed. I think it's a mix of things. I think it's partially, I believe Calgarians have a sense of a proprietal kind of, what's mine is mine and nobody better touch it. And that's a Western Alberta, an Alberta kind of thing. It's not a far-reaching approach because we're one of two provinces that doesn't have a heritage district legislation, so we don't have any heritage districts. I think we're very far behind in our mentality when it comes to culture. I don't think we necessarily, the majority of people or maybe a large number of people, value our culture. We see it as piggybacking off European culture, but to me, home reflects not only the architectural style, and there's a vernacular style to my home which isn't found anywhere else, but it also reflects the spirit of the people who live there. So there's a couple of reasons why people don't designate. I think it's lack of awareness. I think it's lack of economic incentives. I think it's lack of council actually supporting designation. They will designate if it's brought to them, but they make very little effort. And the Enoch Sales House is an example. That sat for some time, and the CMLC granted only bought it in 2017, I think. But we lobbied, my group lobbied, to have something done, and it was always put off. And similarly, there's been other homes, and on the city's inventory, they own a number of heritage assets that sit aren't necessarily treasured. So financial, lack of awareness, lack of support from council. I don't see the vast majority of councillors being very supportive of heritage. There are a few exceptions, like my councillor, Drew Farrell, is supportive of heritage, but she's one of maybe two or three voices on council, so she gets outnumbered every time.
So we talk about history a lot, and especially it comes to the forefront when we have something like the Enoch Sales House. In a lot of different ways, we pay homage to our heritage, whether it's the Calgary Stampede or those sorts of things. Why do you think preserving heritage homes takes a back seat to some of the other ways that we preserve our heritage?
Well, the Calgary Stampede is a good example of basically demolishing heritage to build in that area. So Victoria Park has very little left in terms of heritage as a result of the Stampede. Again, I think it's lack of leadership from our city, from our politicians, municipally and federally and provincially, to really put incentives in place for heritage. Having said that, I don't necessarily believe that I should be told what to do with my house. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a lack of foresight. I mean, the environmental movement is very big, of course. And people talk about sustainability and green buildings. What they don't realize is that so many heritage homes are being trucked to the landfill with nothing being salvaged. And as many economists have said, the greenest home is the one that's already built. Not every house can be saved. There are houses that weren't built properly or have been neglected for 100 years. But many homes are structurally in good shape and can be retrofitted at far less cost in some cases. So to me, it's such a travesty to get rid of these old growth forests and the materials that were used lovingly and with very good craftsmanship. I doubt very much that some of my neighbors' homes that have been built will last as long as mine. I see Edmonton as an example, spending so much money municipally on the Edmonton Heritage Council. And they have workshops and they have programs and they really incite interest. And that's done by the city. I don't see that in Calgary.
So, I mean, you mentioned that you're not Calgarian, yeah. But yet you have an interest in preserving the local history, especially in terms of the building. Why did you get to that point? Like, what is it? Are you a natural history buff, or?
Well, it's not my background. I actually am an immigrant as well. So my father was very much into culture and heritage and learning from the past. So I learned from him that everything is important. The people, the built architecture, all of it has a story to tell, and some of it should be preserved, otherwise it's forgotten. You know, somebody once said, when it's gone, it's gone. And it's true. We can bemoan the past. So, for example, 13 homes on Memorial were torn down for a very small exchange of retaining Starbucks next to us and the Kensington Pub. But you lose that landscape and you lose the character of the community. And I think when it comes to community character, it's a definition that hasn't necessarily been agreed upon by the city. But it's so important. I mean, we move to these neighborhoods because we want to, we like what's there. We always move to a place that we like and feel comfortable with normally. And then we turn around and so many of my neighbors have destroyed the exact thing that they've moved into. And I thought, no, that's not right. I need to take a bit of a risk and preserve my home and say, it's important enough for me to do this, not for myself, but because I feel I'm a steward of the house, and the former owners have been a steward of the house, and it's not my right to do whatever I want with this house. And profit for the sake of profit isn't something I believe in. So as long as I can still make a reasonable profit, and I believe I can when I sell it, that's all I want.
Clearly, Lorna's quite passionate about preserving heritage homes in the city. And the one thing that she said further on in the interview, and I'm just going to sum it up here, was that the process to do this is actually quite simple. Basically, she said she called the city and said that she was looking at designating the home. From there, she worked with one of the city's heritage planners on a bylaw that protected certain parts of the house, and they went through. Not everything needed to be preserved, and the bylaw is designed in a way to make sure that only the things that need to be preserved are preserved. From there, the bylaw is written up, and then it eventually goes to council. And if council approves, then the house is essentially designated as a municipal historic resource. So it's something. It's food for thought. I mean, as Calgary continues to go through this sort of teenage maturity, we need to start thinking about what kind of history that we want to prepare. And Lorna kind of summed it up nicely when she said, "When it's gone, it's gone." And I think that's something, as we saw with the Enoch Sales House, that we need to consider as we talk about Calgary's history. All right, let's take a look at what's coming up in March in On Your Radar. March 2nd and 3rd, we have the international speed skaters converging on the Olympic Oval for the World All-Around Speed Skating Championship. There's sure to be some good action. Go grab yourself a green beer, as St. Patrick's Day is on March 18th this month. With the luck of the Irish, you'll find yourself a nice spot to wear green and enjoy a pint with friends, even if it is on a Monday. Of course, a couple of days after that, the start of spring. First day of spring can't come soon enough, especially after this recent cold spell here in Calgary. And then later in the month, actually a couple days after that, March 22nd, Granary Roads in the southwest of the city is hosting an all-day Latin festival. You can visit granaryroad.com for more information. Now, on the news front, of course, March also marks the highly anticipated election writ. Spring session will begin March 18th at the Alberta Legislature, and I'm hearing that the writ could be dropped the following day, March 19th. And that, of course, will spring us into 30 days of nonstop fun.
Support our mission to provide a better local news option by pledging at patreon.com/livewirecalgary.
Where a girl comes in, she's strung out on whatever she's consumed across the way. She comes into the lobby of the building, strews out on the staircase, and she starts pulling off her face, her nose, her cheeks. There's blood on the walls, blood on the stairs, blood on the railway, a railing. And then a mother with her toddler daughter walks up to the building and has to go inside. How is this safe for the community?
That was an excerpt of one of many Calgarians who came to voice their concern at a recent Community and Protective Services Committee meeting over rising crime around the Sheldon Shamir supervised consumption site. Look, we're not going to solve the issue of addiction or the opioid crisis on this show, but I have a handful of clips I want to play, including one from City Councilor Sean Chu, that show how constructive dialogue can quickly go off the rails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Sherry Crawford. I've lived in Calgary for 35 years. I've always been proud to be a Calgarian and felt that Calgary was a great, well-run city. But I'm here today to say that I'm strongly opposed to the establishment of the supervised consumption services site. I'm sorry. My daughter is a teacher and she lives a block away from the SCS. When she bought her condo 9 years ago, it was a safe area to raise her children. And that safety has declined shockingly. And I know some of this stuff has been said, but still. In my last visit, my little granddaughters and I had to walk past three sets of people doing drugs on the sidewalk. And the visit before that, I had to walk past a person rolling around in the middle of the road. Thankfully, there was a police car nearby, so I could tell them before he was run over. I do have compassion for people struggling with addiction. I volunteered at the Calgary Young Offenders Center for 8 years, and I know some of the horrors that people do try and forget through drugs. I've also had a good friend die through drug use. I do think every life is of value and every life matters. However, in order to reduce the harm that addicts do to themselves, you knowingly and deliberately choose to put the lives of all the innocent taxpaying contributing members of society who live there at risk.
Next up is Jessica, and Jessica has some real world experience here, and she shares that with City Council.
People that are being, feel unsafe to go access services because they know of the increased, but also because I feel like people are more hyper aware.
Was that? The increased police presence? Is that?
Yeah, and the increased community awareness of it, the hypervigilance, I feel has been created ever since people are trying to find a reason to shut us down. People want a reason, and now they're finding it in meth users. But everybody, I was a meth user, and now I'm a contributing member of society. It's possible, and it was just, we can't punish people out of this. We can't criminalize our way out of this. And I understand people feel scared of people they don't understand or know, and I also want to say that people with a meth psychosis, I've been in meth psychosis, they are terrified. They are paranoid and extremely terrified. They're not angry. They're not hostile. They feel like everything is, they're going to get arrested. They feel like everything is coming down on them. Everybody's in on it, and they're just terrified and scared. And so
later on, Councillor Diane Colley-Urquhart continues to ask Jessica about the issue, covering such things as policing, as shelter options. And here's some of what Jessica had to say, including some potential solutions.
Okay. Also, response to, yeah, there's nowhere for them to go. So we only have two shelters in the city. The DI bans people, so unless it's minus 25 or below, there's people that I know have lifetime bans that aren't allowed. So then there's only the Alpha House, that only has 130 mats available, which, right. What's the population of our home? What's our homeless population? Like 7,000 to 8,000, I think? So.
Oh, no, I think maybe half.
Well,
we do the count, but anyway, your point.
You know what I mean? We've got to have at least that and then some.
Yeah.
And it's all, I'd also like to mention there's barriers on a lot of these places. So like the Mustard Seed, you have to be sober to go there. You know, and they're getting funding from the government. And so places like that, like, or religious places where you have to, like the Dream Center, where you have to be, you have to believe in Christianity to go there. And so people very desperate that don't have any other options will take whatever they can get and setting themselves up for failure. And then the more times that they fail, the less motivation they have, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think the whole shelter piece and where people
go is
really something important.
Oh, and the dope team. So
once we get you going, you're really
I know. I got a lot to say. The dope team too. Like I love them and everything, but I call them for clients all the time from the Safe Consumption Site, and there's at least a 3 to 4 hour wait, if that. We're only allowed to hold clients for so long. So of course there's going to be people waiting and you know, hanging out outside.
Okay.
But I also spoke to a client and asked her what she thought what would help. And she said, if we had a safe smoking consumption site, a lot of the people are going into sheltered areas to consume, to smoke, right? And that also just a place to smoke cigarettes, maybe, and something like that. But it's housing. Everybody needs housing.
Okay.
It's like,
okay.
It's pretty clear that Jessica is as passionate as Sherry is about this topic, albeit from two different perspectives on the conversation. The next clip I have for you is Heather Shade. Heather, much like some of the others who spoke, talks about some of the challenges that she's seen in having the supervised consumption site in the area. But what Heather brings that's really meaningful to this conversation is the understanding that maybe we should have had this conversation from the outset. Here's what Heather had to say.
Hope for honest conversations and transparent discussions. I think that is absolutely part of the solution. And I think engaging in this conversation today is something that should have been done prior to the supervised consumption site opening. We wouldn't be here today. We wouldn't have had all the negative experiences in our community. There was support for the site in our community prior. Now it's just reached such a critical level that there's a lot of, I think there's, you know, a lack of respect. This was imposed on us. It wasn't something that we were able to ask candid questions and concerns and fears. And we were told that there was a letter campaign letting people know that this site would be coming. 25,000 mailers were sent out. Nobody that I've spoken to, nobody in the community ever received anything. So
there were a lot of speakers that day, many with stories similar to those I shared with you here in this show. It was good, honest, respectful, for the most part, discussion around this very complex issue. As Heather put it, this is the kind of conversation we should have been having before these things are placed in the communities. I do believe there was some public consultation and people were made aware, but maybe not to this depth. It's very positive, though it can be sometimes challenging to have these conversations. Now, let me tee up this final clip. It's Councillor Sean Chu. I can be as contrarian as the next person. I like challenging the status quo. I understand and to some degree appreciate those people who pose a different perspective. They put themselves out there at the risk of others deriding them for their opinion. And I appreciate it because they're putting in a different perspective, if for no other reason than to put that view into this mix. To that end, Councillor Chu starts off okay in my mind.
It seems like we're so good at wraparound services, not only in this issue, other issue too, all the social agency. And every time they come to see me, at the end, I was asked, how are you going to teach people how to fish? No answer. Or they think a long time before they answer. So I'm not saying that is wrong, but I think there's something we can teach people how to fish, right? In that sense, and this one too. What's the core issue? Maybe I'm wrong, is that don't do drugs. Obviously, it didn't work. It was some time ago, and we're still dealing with the same issue, but which is true. As a police officer working downtown for over 10 years, and often we deal with the same person day in and day out. We heard that quite a few times. And I remember a few persons, and we always go pick up and drop them off in the hospital back when. And three, four times a week. And doesn't seem as big deal, but it is. Think about it. How much a police officer pay for? How much a nurse pay for? How much a doctor pay for? And the transportation, EMS. And that's a lot of money spent on same people. That money cannot spend on someone else. And we continue saying that we don't have enough money. And in this case, and we heard a lot from the local business and residents, what's the trade-off? What's the success? We talk about success. Success is, I have no idea what success is, really. In my opinion, success is nobody doing drugs. Right? We save a lot of stuff. But from here to there, what's the trade-off? Trade-off is those people standing there talking. And do we care? This seems like. And they can go out. They're older, they cannot go out. And we heard the kids counting needles. And the business, going out of business, people breaking the windows. And some time ago, a friend lived downtown, nothing related to this, basement. After his car window got broken three times, you know what he does? He opened a window. You want to take? Take it. Whatever's inside, but please don't break my window. Each time's a few $100. So, and we also heard that decriminalize all drugs. Wow. And I actually heard some counselor, agree to it. I'm scared to think that we actually decriminalize this. If there's such an issue, why don't we just decriminalize everything? We save $400-some million a year on policing. Security, don't need security, nothing. We don't need nothing. Decriminalize everything, everybody's happy. In this case, who's the true victim here? I would argue it's all the police officers that go out there. I have partner got spit on and who has HIV and broke the skin. He has to drink the medical cocktail and 6 months cannot touch his wife. And he told me that's the worst experience in his whole life. It's incredible. And the police officer, EMS, transportation, the fire department helping out pick up needles, and it's so easy to get poked. And the nurses in the hospital, as policemen, I've seen that, nurses dealing with those people. And the healthcare workers and surrounding neighbors and businesses.
Up to this point, I'm okay with what Counselor Chu had to say. It's another part of the conversation, another perspective, which I would have probably assumed that many people share. But it goes downhill from here. It continues to devolve into further and further degradation to the point where we get to this particular comment.
Anyone here would love to have this shooting gallery next to you or move to your neighborhood? Anybody raise your hand?
Point of privilege, through the chair, I have found a number of the comments made by Councillor Chu to be deeply, deeply offensive and disrespectful to the expertise and the professionals in this room. I think you should be ashamed of some of the things that have come out of your mouth, Councillor Chu. It has been a run-on sentence of total drivel.
Tell us how you really feel, Councillor Woolley. It's at this point that any of the potentially legitimate concerns Councillor Sean Chu brought forth are now wrapped in the insensitive and inexcusable reference to the supervised consumption site as a shooting gallery. The things he brought up literally mean nothing. If I'm to be honest, I'd have second thoughts about a supervised consumption site in my neighborhood. I have young children, and after hearing some of these concerns, I would be more than willing to express my concerns in an appropriate public forum and expect to be presented with solutions at some point down the road. If we're to have these conversations and come up with solutions, we need to be willing to engage in respectful dialogue despite our differences. Once we resort to name-calling or innuendo, we don't have a leg to stand on. This should be the standard operating procedure as a member of the public, but we should expect better from our elected officials. Whew, that's a wrap. Once again, thanks for joining me this month. We were able to fit everything in. My thanks to Lorna Cordero for talking to me about Heritage Homes. You can find us at livewirecalgary.com for all of your local news needs, and we will talk to you again next month. So long.